นะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะ Sometimes I feel that when I talk that the quality of the words has an inverse relationship with the quantity. As the quantity of words I've been speaking over the last week at the conference in Perth and so on has been fairly substantial. Perhaps, I don't know how much the quality is going to be this evening. Anyway, I'll do my best. I wanted to say a few words this evening on the topic of wisdom and to see if we can tease out this notion of what wisdom is in Buddhism. And of course, Buddhism, like all religions and philosophies, values wisdom. But we don't necessarily have a very precise understanding of what wisdom is. And one person's wisdom, of course, may well be another person's folly. One of the basic distinctions that they make in Buddhism is between the three kinds of wisdom, the suttamaya panya, chintamaya panya, bhavanamaya panya, the wisdom that's made from learning, wisdom from reflection, and wisdom from meditation. Now, even as I say those three kinds of wisdom, I have a kind of doubt in my mind. I always get the first two of those mixed up, and I can't remember which way they should be mixed up. Is it chinta first and then sutta, reflection and then learning, or is it learning and then reflection? And I think the reason why I get it mixed up is because it's not entirely clear to me when I read the correct order, as it says in the text. It's not entirely clear to me why it is that order and not the other way around. So because of that, I sometimes get confused and get the order mixed up. And that itself is a little bit of wisdom, isn't it? And that is one of the essences of wisdom, is that ability to reflect, to understand, to look inside and understand your own mind, own mental processes, your own what's going on when you come to various conclusions. It's one of the very central aspects of wisdom. It has this reflective capacity. Now, if we look at these different kinds of wisdom that it talks about in Buddhism, so the suttamaya panya, the wisdom derived from learning, or literally from hearing, from sutta. Of course, the word sutta here isn't the word sutta, meaning discourse with two T's. It's a completely different word called sutta with one T, and just happens to have a very similar meaning and sound, which is a bit confusing, but it's actually a completely different word. Suttamaya panya means the wisdom derived from learning. So if applied, of course, as a general theory of wisdom, then it could mean any kind of learning, but obviously within the Buddhist context, it means the learning of the Dhamma primarily. So this suttamaya panya is in a sense a somewhat passive process. Listening is somewhat passive. I mean, of course, actually we know listening is also an active process. We have to engage in order to listen properly. But relatively speaking, it's a fairly passive process. It's mostly about absorbing from the external. Now, that kind of wisdom is always in Buddhism regarded as quite essential. So for those of us who are not Buddhas or on the way to becoming Buddhas or Pacheka Buddhas, then learning the external sources of the Dhamma, learning the teachings, learning the suttas, is an essential part of what we're doing. And even though one often finds in modern times a deprecation of this kind of wisdom, this is not something that you find at all in the early Buddhist texts themselves. So these days you quite often find people saying things like, you know, that's just that's just learning, and that's not as good as meditation, or that's just intelligence, that's not real wisdom, and so on. And so there's this division and this deprecation of intellect or intelligence in favor of a or perhaps intuitive form of wisdom. Now that process of deprecating reason, as I said before, is not found in Buddhist scriptures at all, certainly not in the early Buddhist scriptures. And in its modern incarnations, probably owes more to the Western Romantic movement than anything else. And like many other of the dogmas which you hear quite commonly thrown around in Buddhism, it's passed off as a piece of Buddhist wisdom, whereas in fact it's an actual import of Western divisions and crises and contradictions, which actually have no place in the Buddha's own teachings. And there's nowhere in the early teachings where the Buddha pits intelligence against wisdom. But as we see in this group, that the learning is one form of wisdom. It's foundational for developing wisdom. So when we hear, when we learn, what are we doing? Well, what we're doing, of course, is that we're internalizing the wisdom of others, the wisdom of those who have come before. We're paying attention to that good advice, to that knowledge of experience which those who've come before us have had. And we know that listening to good advice is a very sensible thing to do. It's a very wise thing to do. When we need to get our car fixed, we'll take it to Mike, the mechanic, down at the local garage, and we'll listen to his advice on how to get the car fixed. If I want to know how to fix a computer problem, I'll listen to the advice of Bhante Nandiya, because he's an expert in IT. If I want advice on how to do a piece of origami, then I'll listen to Ayapattachara. He's an expert on origami. And so even in simple things, then listening to the words and the advice of those who've been there before and learnt the skills is useful. More than being useful, it's quite essential. We can't actually live in a world where we have to reinvent the wheel all the time, can we? That's why we so much like sharing information. We have a need that when we know something, if it comes inside us, a feeling that we it feels good to share it. And when you're trying to do something, it's also a feeling inside you where it feels good to have good advice on how to do that thing. So this is something which is, I think, programmed into human culture and programmed into the human psyche at a very deep level. This is what culture is a sharing of knowledge and sharing of wisdom, how to get things done. And if listening to the voice of experience and the voice of those who've been there before is so useful and so essential, even for simple and trivial things, then how much more useful and essential is it going to be when we're faced with very profound questions like the nature of the Dhamma? So this is why it's very crucial for us all as practitioners of the Dhamma to learn and study the suttas, especially the suttas as the closest that we can possibly come to the words of the Buddha. Insofar as later commentaries, teachers, and advice and so on is useful, then also we should study those things. Not because we want to accumulate knowledge for the sake of knowledge, but because knowledge is good, knowledge is useful. Knowledge gives you confidence. Knowledge allows you to deal with different situations. It continually informs you as to what's happened before, how we can benefit that, how that situation has been dealt with, it gives you precedent, it gives you examples. And so you can see that there are many people who have a sense of curiosity, a sense of a love of knowledge. And I could see at this conference that we were just at that there are quite a few people who really struck me as being like that. Say, Professor Lewis Lancaster, a Buddhist professor from the States, he's still learning. Recently did he's quite elderly now. He's at an age where most people would be wanting to retire, but he recently did another course on a new kind of systems theory in the US. Hema Gunatilaka, a Sri Lankan academic and scholar who's been studying, practicing Buddhism for many decades and still has this enthusiasm, this love of learning. Or Bhikkhuni Jambasedran was another one who we had many very fascinating conversations with, and she's always has a very inquiring mind, always very has a great thirst for knowledge. And so that thirst for knowledge always stands us in good stead, and it's always something which the Buddha praised. And we know that throughout Buddhist history that the Sangha was traditionally encouraged to memorize the teachings. So this is again, this is Suttamaya Panya, to learn what these things are. Having a broad basis in learning was always something that was very praiseworthy. And we still find this throughout many Buddhist cultures, this great love of learning the Dhamma. But what perhaps one of the limitations in the Buddhist cultures is that while there's a love of learning the teachings, there's much less, seems to be much less interest in reflecting on them. There's chintamaya panya, wisdom that's derived from thought. So as we consider what the nature of this chintamaya panya is, we need to consider a little bit about what thought is. Now, I said that when we're considering Suttamaya Panya, that the learning from another, in a sense, is always learning from the past. It's learning something second-hand. It's learning from other people's experience. Chintamaya Panya, the wisdom of reflection, is also, in a way, trapped in the past, although not so directly. Because when we're thinking about things, when we're reflecting on them, we're doing so using language. And language, of course, is made up of words. Words are things that we have learnt in the past. Grammar is something we've learnt in the past. So our ability to formulate and articulate thoughts to ourselves is dependent on a process of learning which has happened in the past. And that is both the advantage of thinking and also the limitation. It's the advantage of it because it means that when we think, that our thought is not simply cut loose from reality. It has a foundation. Even though thought itself is abstract, thought is not limited by physics or chemistry, is not limited by the laws of the universe. We can think anything that we want. But our thinking is given structure and limits and direction by the conditioning from which it comes. And also by the close relationship between thought and speech. So when we reflect on the teaching, the quality of our reflection on the teachings is largely determined by the clarity with which we have learnt the teachings. If our Suttamaya Panya is weak, if we don't have really much knowledge of what the Buddha taught, if we don't have a clear understanding of what the terms and doctrines in Buddhism are, then we can't clearly reflect on them. So this is why we should bring a sense of care and attention to each of these aspects of wisdom. When we're thinking, when we're reflecting about Dhamma, then we should also keep that sense of quality about it. Keep questioning yourself. If you apply your mind to a particular teaching, ask yourself, is that really true? Is there another way of looking at it? If somebody presents you an idea or a view which is different from your own, don't just block it out and reject it. Notice if your thinking is always going over the same things, always trying to defend and articulate the same point of view to yourself. Notice if those tendencies of thought are constructive or destructive. So we bring a reflective capacity to the process of thought itself. And so this is the ability to use our thought, our reflective capacity well, is a sign of, and one might even consider it to be the definition of, intelligence. So for me, I think of intelligence as being the ability to use reason. And even though, as I mentioned earlier, reason is sometimes deprecated in modernist Buddhism, the rejection of reason, I think that's largely just laziness, personally, and an unwillingness to subject yourself to the rigors of critical thinking. And that's not wisdom, that's just failing to learn how to use reason properly. So if intelligence is knowing how to use reason, then wisdom is knowing the end of reason. Wisdom is knowing the limits of reason. And this is perhaps a distinctively Indic contribution to the notion of wisdom. Notice that I said Indic or Indian rather than Buddhist, because it's also found very strongly in the Upanishadic tradition. And that notion is that there's a point where reason doesn't serve anymore, that the deepest truths are inaccessible to reason. And that Indian tradition is quite different than the mainstream tradition in Western philosophy and Western science. From the time of Socrates, he believed that with the power of reason and the power of deduction, we could arrive at the truth in an absolute sense. However, history has shown us that that's actually not the case. It's shown us that whenever we think we're using pure reason to arrive at a conclusion, in fact, there are inbuilt in our reason various assumptions, various qualifications, various limitations, and it's not possible using pure reason to arrive at the truth. In the Indian tradition, this has always been known. And the philosophers, mystics, meditators who compiled the Upanishadic texts in the centuries before the Buddha were well aware of this. They knew how to use reason, and they knew when reason came to an end. And you find this also within the suttas quite clearly and quite explicitly. For example, when the Buddha is being asked about a number of dhammas which kind of lead up to higher and higher dhammas, and finally you come to nibbana, and then the Buddha says, well, here we've reached the end of questioning. What's beyond that? We can't say. It's not something which is answerable by reason. So this is where we have this notion of bhavana maya panya, the wisdom derived from meditation. Now the word here, bhavana, we conventionally translate as meditation. And it probably does mean meditation in this context. But the literal meaning of bhavana is making more of something. Making more of what? Well, of course, making more of the mind. expanding the mind, enhancing the mind, growing your mental powers, your power of vision, the power of knowing in the mind through meditation, primarily through meditation. So what Bhavanamaya Panya does is it takes that wisdom which we've developed through Suttamaya Panya and Chintamaya Panya, and it takes it to a whole new level. It transcends mere learning, and it transcends mere reason. But it doesn't do that by rejecting learning or rejecting reason. It does that by making more of them, by expanding them. It does that by taking those things we've learnt and things we've reflected on and applying them in the present moment to the reality as we experience it on the bleeding edge, the razor's edge of experience. And so through Bhavanamaya Panya, we're no longer trapped in the knowledge of the past. This is the wisdom that arises from direct experience in the present. Because, of course, wisdom from the past is always limited because, well, the future, the present is not identical with the past. And the future will not be identical with the present. So we can learn the principles, we can learn the ideas, we can learn the generalities of things. But the specifics will always be different in the present. And that makes everything much more immediate, much more real, much more powerful. So for example, when we study suttas, for example, we maybe study a teaching on impermanence. We can read, say, the Mahaparinibbana Sutta about how the Buddha passed away. We can look at the different ways that the Buddha reflected on his coming demise, the different ways people responded to it, Ananda's response and other people's response to it, and how the events of that narrative lead up to the inevitable but still very moving passing away of the Buddha. And so we can study that text and improve our Suttamaya Panya. And when we've studied it, when the text is clear in our minds, we know what it is, and we reflect on it, we think about it. What does it mean? We can apply it in different contexts. So for example, today a few of us went down to a funeral in Sydney. The Venerable Thich Phuc Quay, a senior Vietnamese monk, had passed away, and we went down to pay our respects and to support the community through our presence at the funeral. And we had the opportunity to view the body. Notice I hesitated there because I wasn't quite sure what the polite word to use is. The corpse, is that polite? The body, the remains. So again, that's that reflective capacity. As I'm talking, not just the words coming out, but I'm also reflecting on it as I'm doing it. So I'm aware, if I hesitate, I'm aware, oh, I'm hesitating, and I look inside and I see, okay, there's a reason why. Or if there's a doubt, or if I don't phrase something clearly, then I reflect inside. Why is that? What aren't I clear about? So as we were viewing the, and again I hesitate, the body, you know, we can see, well, this is the physical form of a human being who's passed away. A monk who's lived a long life, born in 1922. The last several decades of that life spent in Sydney, developing and promoting Buddhism, building temples, teaching, and creating a very strong community. And all of that work, all of that effort, now is over. It's just that. It's just that physical husk, if you like, the remnant. We could see his face lying there. So it gave us an opportunity to reflect about death and impermanence, not through learning, not through the sutta talking about what happened in the time of the Buddha, but through looking right, what's happening there? And we can reflect about it, think about it in terms of the teachings, remind ourselves that this is the reality of impermanence. It's not just something that happened in the time of the Buddha, it's something which is a living reality here and now. So this is bringing it closer to home. But closer to home still is the Bhavanamaya Panya. We look inside your mind right now. Things fall apart. This is the Buddha's last words in the Mahavarinibbana Sutta, Vaya Dhamma Sankhara. Things fall apart. We look inside, we see that's happening right now. It's not something that's just going to happen in 10 years time or 20 years time or 30 years time. It's something that's happening right now. We are disintegrating. Feelings are falling apart. Thoughts are collapsing. The body is aging. We can experience this reality in the present moment. And this is the Bhavanamaya Panya. It's informed by the other forms of wisdom. It's deepened by them, but it takes them much, much further. It's no longer something which is in the there and then. It's no longer something which is trapped in the past. It's no longer something that just happens to other people. It's the actual living reality inside ourselves every moment. Bhavanamaya Panya. And the more that we meditate, the more that we find clarity of mind and peace of mind, the deeper this insight will become. It won't become a different thing. It's the same thing. It's the same insight. But it becomes far, far more powerful, far, far more meaningful. It will have, at times, a shocking and terrifying emotional impact. Bhavanamaya Panya. So each of these forms of wisdom is essential. Each of these forms of wisdom helps us to move from suffering towards peace. None of them are optional. We can't just decide to do one or the other. We need to do them all. So how do we know what's right? How do we know really what's wisdom and what isn't? What is the essence of wisdom? That was a trick question. This is Buddhism. There's no essence of anything. Wisdom doesn't have an essence. What it does have is a function. There's a purpose. That purpose is to help us to let go. And through letting go, to find peace. When we study the suttas, when we explore the teachings, at that time as we're applying ourselves, we're letting go of wrong views, letting go of distorted or unclear ways of seeing things. When we're developing Chintamaya Panya, reflecting on the teachings, reflecting on the Dhamma, we're letting go of unskillful habits of thought. We're letting go of patterns of thought that lead us to destructive and negative states of mind. And we're developing wholesome and constructive ways of thought. And when we develop the Bhavanamaya Panya, and we're letting go even at a much deeper level, letting go of a sense of self, letting go of the illusion of permanence. And so we know if it's real wisdom because it leads to the real result. You can't fake it. Well, you can actually. Real wisdom leads to real peace, not to fake peace. You can have fake peace. It's psychology, they call it dissociation. You shove things out and you can be peaceful, but only because you've kind of rejected all of the stress and suffering or anxiety and locked the door. The problem with that kind of peace, of course, is that the door doesn't remain locked. Eventually it opens up there's always a tension there. So that's something we learn. It's an ongoing process. But real wisdom leads to real peace. And once you've tasted that real peace, you know it. You don't have to worry about it. You know this is the peace that comes from letting go. So wisdom isn't something that is an end in itself in Buddhism. And somebody once said, and I think it was a very insightful summary, that in ancient China the ideal person was virtuous. In Greece the ideal person was wise. While in India the ideal was freedom. And I think that's very true. I think in Buddhism, of course, there's a big emphasis on virtue. There's a big emphasis on wisdom. But neither wisdom nor virtue is the goal. Wisdom and virtue are the path. The goal is freedom. And if our wisdom is leading us to freedom, then it's the right form of wisdom. So this is just a few reflections for you this evening on the topic of wisdom. I offer this for your reflection, for your learning, reflection and meditation, wisdom. And I'd like to invite you to...